Welcome to the UFO Files Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
Hi, this is Jerry Pippin, and welcome to our show, Pioneer Radio listeners. Tonight, we have something very interesting, a unique experiment. We are going to present an outtake, a program that is being edited for our syndicated radio show in the States. And you'll be able to hear all of the program without the edits. I think you'll find it interesting. There'll be a little bit of the rattling of the microphone and maybe some off-side comments. So just overlook those, because I think you'll find the show very interesting. We're talking with Wes Bateman, a man behind many of the ideas for Star Trek. So stay tuned. I think you'll like the show.
Hi, everybody. Jerry Pippin with the UFO Files, and we broadcast from lots of places, but this is the first for any network radio show, I think. We're broadcasting from Dolan Springs, Arizona, which is on the way to Hoover Dam. And it's a pretty interesting place because a very interesting fellow lives here. And I'd like to introduce everybody to Wes Bateman. How are you?
I guess fine, Jerry.
I know that we're going to discuss several things on our broadcast today. But the first thing I think people need to know is that you've been doing this ufology and research in this much more in depth than almost anybody I know for a long time.
Yes, since actually in the mid-1960s, we got involved with the subject of UFOs and have continued to this day, keeping mainly a low profile, not really getting out into the public to any great extent.
You know, I wanted to talk to you a little bit right up front. A lot of people probably don't recognize your name because you said you had a low profile, and that's true, but if I've ever watched Star Trek, some of those things that they use actually came from lectures they saw you give.
That's right. In the 60s, prior to the creation of the first Star Trek, we had a foundation called the Mind Research Foundation in Hollywood, and it was at that time that Gene Roddenberry was looking for stories for Star Trek, and he asked permission for his writers to sit in on lectures and so forth. And later, things were getting even tougher for them. Gene Kuhn took over the production of Star Trek, and we met quite a few times. But Gene Roddenberry was looking to others, you know, not only us. He spoke to such people who were active in the field at that time, such as George Van Tassel and Gabriel Green and so forth. But it a good feeling to see that it was a successful show, and of course that the sequels and the kept going on and on. And
you know, one of the things that immediately I think about is the Prime Directive. And that's kind of a concept that you feel is based on truth.
That's right. It was Gene Kuhn who actually hung on to that particular the subject of the Prime Directive, and that's why there is little contact with people or interference with the way that a particular culture is developing on a world. And that is definitely something that applies to the present UFO phenomenon and how the extraterrestrials are dealing with this world. And it goes a little bit further beyond the extraterrestrials coming up with this idea of not interfering. This goes even to into their religious beliefs. It's something that goes beyond the extraterrestrials themselves.
You know, one of the things about that, you bring up that subject, Wes, and I've been doing broadcasts for this for many, many years, but the more I do it, the more I realize that the spiritual element is there.
That's right. Well, we must, to understand that, we must understand what's actually going on this planet. Why would they come here? Why are they bothering with what is happening here? The UFO subject had, as I said earlier in our preliminary conversation, there is no real mystery to it anymore. The answers to just about everything, cattle mutilation, abductions, why they are arrive at certain times in patterns, and where they're located, they can be predicted. In fact, a high-speed infrared film has been taken of UFOs, because those that photographed them very nonchalantly went up, set up their tripods, and just had to wait a few minutes and start rolling film. And the whole thing is based upon that. Well, today in our technology, we could map and analyze another planet in one mission that would take us about 5 days if we only could get the equipment we have available to that planet. But UFOs have been with us for thousands of years. Certainly, they'd be through analyzing and mapping this world. Well, the answer is very simple. They're observing something that is constantly changing, something that we are have not been aware of. And this condition has a lot to do with us in the sense that we are not evolving as a species. We are re-evolving.
Re-evolving. I like that. Explain that a little bit.
All right. We can imagine that what they're saying today is a dinosaur is turning into a bird, all right? That's where birds came from. They look at the anatomy of the way the legs are constructed biologically, and they say, my God, it looks just like dinosaur legs. Well, there's some fossils that you look at it shows a feathered reptile, but are we looking at something going from a reptile to a bird, or are we looking at something that was a bird going to a reptile and now is re-evolving, coming back to what it originally was? In other words, now there's what we call forbidden archaeology. There's a great deal of evidence of strange things found in strata layers that are millions and millions of years old.
For example, you mean like something is in a fossil that shouldn't be there, like maybe a bracelet or a necklace or something?
That's correct, and you hit it right on the head. There are chalk beds in both England and France. They have found a gold jewelry that was definitely worked by an intelligence, and these chalk beds are millions of years old. There are tile floors that have been have a pattern that were found in millions of year old stratas in Montana. Type of machined objects found in coal mines in Hungary, or machine screws found in anthracite coal in Pennsylvania. Now, this is a very long time ago, and I know it's hard for people to my goodness, what happened? Well, the Earth suffered a geological catastrophe millions of years ago. And as we understand it, prior to that time, people were living on this planet who had a great many abilities that became lost to us, but now we're recovering them. We might say they were using all of their mental faculties. Consequently, when this event occurred, the Earth's core went into a very terrible hot oscillation. And the core sends off random harmonics, which are not harmonious to the way that our brains operate. So we don't use all of our mental faculties. We just don't. If you have to trust you to do.
Go ahead.
Consequently, they can't tolerate this condition. Where we can, because we're like, say, tempered or familiarized with it. But they've been observing it. And how they've been observing it is by observing earthquakes and volcanic eruptions.
The interesting thing about volcanic eruptions and earthquakes, you have a theory, and I guess it's really more than a theory, that's somehow related to ET site, UFO site.
That's correct. Going back in the newspapers during the times that UFO sightings were being reported in the newspapers,
quite a lot of our newer listeners don't really believe that, but I remember seeing pictures of flying saucers over the nation's capital in my local paperback in Muskogee, Oklahoma in 1952.
Absolutely. Where I can remember the occasion where Al Chop, the fellow that was known as the voice of Mercury Control, he read a book of that. And I have seen the pictures, the radar pictures, where it shows a jet chasing them, and the saucers would disappear. As soon as the jet went back to its base, they came back. It was quite a stir in those days. But the main thing is that I recall one particular occasion where in 1965, March of 1965, where UFOs were seen over Hillsdale in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And that was the time that the Air Force dismissed those sightings as swamp gas, if you recall.
They still use that explanation occasionally.
Well, the Los Angeles Herald Examiner couldn't make up their mind what they were going to use as a headline. The giant earthquakes that took place in China, or the Hillsdale and Arbor sightings, so they used both. And if you, those that are familiar, know that with earthquakes, are probably also familiar with the fact that earthquakes generate what are called push and shear waves, or simply push and TNS waves. And they radiate out from a quake in such a way that they penetrate the Earth, bounce off the molten core of the planet, and come out at a 7,000-mile surface distance from where the earthquake took place. It is at those locations that your UFO sightings take place. Other waves that pass through the core come out at 9,500 miles. Now, the difference between the two is called a quiet zone. There's no activity there. You can go back, there's so many, if you go through the morgue, within the UFO activity is usually in anywhere from 3 days before a good-sized quake to 3 days after a quake, if it's an earthquake they're interested in. And
So basically you're saying, which comes first, the earthquake or the UFOs?
Well, they're able to predict when they're going to happen. And that's something that our science is trying to do, of course, to be warning people. The Chinese take the activity of farm animals very seriously. I think it was I can't remember exactly which city, but they moved 2 million people out of a city just because some horse was running around crazy in his stall, and the earthquake occurred. Now, snakes will come out of their hibernation holes and freeze to death on the ice because the earthquakes are coming. Bears will leave their hibernation early, such as the Good Friday earthquake in the early up in Alaska. They say, well, the bears are out early. Yeah, well, the bears got up because they didn't want to be buried in their dens or whatever. And I think animals in zoos become very upset prior to earthquakes. Bullfrogs, female frogs will croak and swim in, they normally swim in one direction, if counterclockwise, clockwise, but when the earthquakes are going to come off, they go in a completely opposite, the females also start croaking. So I can go on with that. Japanese fishermen know there's going to be an earthquake because the small sea life comes off the bottom of the sea. The fish start eating more and they get a bigger fish catch. So we can go on and on about those things. But the key thing here is that the extraterrestrials are interested in earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, and nuclear bomb detonation. Why nuclear bomb detonation? Not because they're afraid of us and our nuclear weapons. They are only have to take these into consideration because it involves their thousands of years study on, you know, because Earth, the nuclear weapons produce the same types of waves that earthquakes do. That's it. Now, why are they doing that? Well, the Earth's core is vibrating, as I said, and is cutting down on causing us to not use all of our mental faculties. They're reading these waves because if there's a crack, the waves travel slower. If that crack has gone back together to every degree, then it moves faster through the waves move faster through the material. And they're looking for an eventual time when the Earth will be totally healed of its cracks and the Earth's core will be vibrating again in what would be considered natural. And
so basically, you're saying that the Earth's core is not nearly even close to 50% yet. And its harmonic vibrations, or whatever you'd like to refer to it as. I'm a layman, and I'm not sure scientifically what you refer to that as.
No, it is quite close to a correction, and I don't know why because we look at the way we're progressing. Last 100 years, how much our technology has improved and so forth. And our children are becoming smarter. They are. So I believe that our very near future, I won't put time date on it, my goodness, this has been going on for millions of years, and the extraterrestrials realized that they've been putting time and effort into studying this phenomenon for thousands of years. So, but we are getting there. There's evidence of their interest, more of an interest to us at this time, because they have sent messages. 9 messages were received by way of telescopic radio telescopes.
Are we talking about the SETI project?
Well, it's hard to tell because the information, how I found it, was I linked from the SETI website to another website where these messages were on as a game. A fellow took credit and said, well, let's see if we can't play with this and come up with how these messages are written. And his reason for doing this was so that we would be prepared to what would we have to do to answer, to translate a real message together. Well, that proved to be baloney, because what they are, these 9 messages are real. And what they relate to is, it is it's simply amazing. You don't have to be a genius to read them if you have a certain basic understanding of a system called the Ross system of mathematics, which was used in the construction of the Great Pyramid, the second and third pyramids at Giza, Teotihuacan, Mexico, Palenque, and also there's evidence of the use of this on at the place called Cydonia, the plain on the planet Mars. Now, this system, we call it the Ra system because our understanding of it came from studying the Great Pyramid. And that research began in the 1975, and has gone on to this day. And then when the became aware of the messages, there are certain things about the messages that just stood right out. Which, for instance, that there was a 19 tones in the first message and 18 in the second message, which total 37. Where there's a table in the Ra system, which are called the Ra table of nines, and there are 37 numbers in the Ra table of nines. So this was the first thing. And the people said that the tones were actually the duration of each tone was 0.492 seconds. Well, I said, okay, let's take a look at this. Now, their first section of the first message reads, they used letters to begin with till they ran out of letters and start using every other symbol on the keyboard until eventually they reached 82 tones. But it's really only 81 active tones. That's 9 times 9. And the 82nd tone, which is actually the seventh tone, which is their G, are used as extending the length of the message or extending or separating the actual data, one set of data from the next.
Kind of a interstellar dash.
Yeah. Well, the G is the seventh letter of the alphabet. And what it really stands for is the seventh period to the periodic table of elements. If you look at the Grand Gallery of the Great Pyramid, you've got seven ceilings and 37 overlapping stones, which means that 37 represents electron movement in the seven electron shells, K to Q. Okay. Now, coming back to the messages, the first section of the first messages, first message tells you immediately that these guys that are saying they made up this game are just full of it. Because what you got is G, B, G, all right? B is the second letter of the alphabet. It would be where that would be represented by the number 54. Because you have 27, 54, 81, 108, 135. In other words, multiples of the number 9. So we have 54. Just take their 0.492 and divide it into 54, and they're busted. Because what you get is a number very close to what is called the Rydberg constant for hydrogen. So get a little correction here, and you end up with their 0.492 actually becomes 0.492. 0.75 divided into 54 is the Rydberg constant. Rydberg constant used in mathematical equations to determine the wavelength for the spectral lines of hydrogen from infrared to ultraviolet. So I'll leave it with that because it's lots of different complicated. But what we're getting is circles, squares, spheres. And relationships to what are called the various physical constants, such as charge to mass constant, permeability constant, which is otherwise known as the constant for magnetism in free space, the permittivity constant, which is the electrical field in free space. Well, it just goes on and on. But they're really telling us something here. The way it looks, even after all this time, we got so much data out of the first 7 seconds of the messages, and we've been working on it for a year or more. So
can you give us an idea of what this first message, a little bit that you've been able to decipher, what is it about?
What it is, it's talking about gravity. You know, we never quite understood gravity, but Einstein said that when we understood gravity, he was real sure that we were going to find that magnetism and gravity are the manifestation of the same thing. Right, because this is what we are finding these things out. We have got all of these constants that are expressed in what we call raw terms. You have to understand, we take like the meters, grams, and seconds, and convert them to what we call rams, okay, raw meters, grams, and natural seconds. Okay, now you heard the raw music, that's based on natural second of time. So in doing that, for all I know, what they're saying is the unified field theory that Einstein was working on, I think the first 7 seconds of this message has given us that. There's a lot, as I say, you don't have to be a genius to read it. You know, we got the lyrics. We're still looking for the right tune. You understand? It takes people that are, of course, are specialized in certain fields that have to take a look at this thing.
Wes, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but is this somewhat like a scientific holy grail or something?
It most definitely is. It is. It's hard to tell. We have 9 messages here. Okay, again, 81 phones, 9 messages. And some of these, we are at section 8 of message 1, which is 45 sections. I think that message 3 has 1,500 different tone characters in different combinations. They were right to, you know, these people that were trying to con people into doing their work for them, they were right to say, gee, we sure like to know how this was written. We have found that the numbers or the tones are in such a way that you have to pair them up. Anything that matches, you double. Anything that's left over is considered a applying a number or a divider. So we have 2 kinds we have found already. It's called, we call one type of the seesaw and the other the mirror. And it is from these that we've been able to find these various constants. And we're finding that these constants in the NGS system are not compatible to each other. Well, we can understand, because it's the way things are measured, do you understand, where they can affect the measuring equipment. Where this seems to be coming from is from something that it moves me to say this, if I might, and that is, it is the mathematical language that nature uses to describe itself. Okay, and it shows that the universe is not in a state of chaos. Using the NGS system, I can understand where somebody said, gee, well, this thing don't match with this necessarily, but okay, it shows that the universe was built on a divine plan, and believe me, if there's a divine plan, there's a divine planner. So I believe it is the language of the universe. It is given to us benevolence. It's not to be, it's for the world. I don't see anything here saying this was meant for a special interest group or for a bunch of elite bunch of characters that look for, I guess, extraterrestrial that next year will be as like ET or in France or, you know, wherever the donation money will take them. But, or putting up millions of dollars worth of telescopes, you know. Why? Because the answers have already been here. And I'd like to see that go into some other worthwhile thing. That this, you know, there's so many areas where this world could certainly use that kind of funding.
And is there an overall message so far that you're getting? I mean, is there any lesson there yet?
This is just a message that is compounding messages from the past. This is saying it's near time. The time is coming. This is a calling card. This is, we're here. We're going to give you something to prove it. And now I have written books, and don't think I'm pushing books because I'm not writing them anymore. I've written a few, but one idea that I'm proud of is called the Rod and Ramen Ra, which is over 800 pages of study on the Great Pyramid. And there's a lot of those books out around the world. In fact, there's been one on every continent. Even Greenpeace took a copy with them to Antarctica when they went down there to tear apart their weather station when they took it down. The Rob books deal with pyramids, and it shows beyond a shadow of a doubt that no primitive societies have built the Great Pyramid. They'd have to have spectroscopes because it relates to the spectral lines of hydrogen and things like that. And believe me, okay. What I'm saying here is that what's going on in the Earth, in the very end, and I don't think maybe this is the time to do it, but what I'm I don't know of anybody, even all the people I've taught, you know, lots of them, that would have recognized the way to do the message. There might be, as I say, people read my book might know how to do it. The extraterrestrials have concluded somebody knows how to do it. Do you understand what I'm saying? Otherwise, why do it? Okay. So we kind of laugh and say this is our own personal ET email, you know. But
that's a good term, by the way. I like that. Good handle.
Well, I really don't know, you know, how far people have taken the work. You know, that I really don't know, but they seem to know that somebody knows. So, which is good, and these guys that put this thing out of the game, not a million years would have broke it. They would have broke this.
And you're continuing to work on this day after day, and even now.
And that's right. And day after day, a group that comes to my location, and we go over things, and a lot of times the people are able to catch things I couldn't catch. As we sit here, you see there's a big whiteboard over here, and we have those, you see those groups of numbers up there in horizontal relationships to each other. Well, the key is to find out what goes on what we call the baseline. And you'll notice the numbers A are shorter in value. In other words, over here and then larger over here. Well, if you keep dividing these numbers by by the number 1.0125, which we now call the hydrogen ratio, and they get, if you divide that one, of course, it gets smaller or multiplied as large. Well, just to show you, we went through a days of putting together a little thing, and somebody happened to say, do you notice that at this point, the numbers on the left become larger and the numbers on the right become smaller? Yeah, well, these are the kind of things. And you say, okay, well, that means that every way that changes, you understand it's a baseline. So everybody's been contributing. You understand? Everybody catches things. And so, but I believe that once this is looked at by physicists who can let go of their programming, you know, to say, gee, well, you know, take a fresh look at something, they're going to come up with ideas. You know, it, as I say, it's not a one-man band here. And but the way things are, it seems to be everybody's got to hold this to themselves in order to financially gain or have gained power or something of that nature. This can't be handled that way.
Wes, it seems to me that in our conversation so far, you keep coming back to the basics of life and existence itself, and it seems to be a mathematical formula.
Right. Well, it is. See, we're laid out of what we call Fibonacci ratios, like, and I know the term Fibonacci will mean something to some people, but others will say, who's that? Sounds like an Italian. Well, he was an Italian in 1179. Went to North Africa with his father, who was a merchant, and gained knowledge of the numbers from 1 to 9 and the 0. And he took them back to Europe, where they were using, at the time, Roman numerals and Greek letters as a means of calculation. And it was recognized that for instance, the Fibonacci number is always the sum of the previous two. So you got 1 and 1 is 2, 2 and 1 is 3, 3 and 2 is 5, 5 and 3 is 8, etc. Now, if you divide the smaller number into the higher number, you get what are called Fibonacci ratios. Okay? But these are if you keep doing that, the first procedure, you're going to have something that's greater than what they call phi, which is 1.618033989, or simply 1.62. It gets higher and lower, and then finally it reaches a baseline of 1.618033989, and the series stops. Well, those numbers are found to be in nature, all over nature. Flowers lay out their, or plants lay out their leaves on the order of Fibonacci ratio. The, what is called the Fibonacci logarithmic spiral, like the curve of the shell of a chambered mollusk or snail, that is called the Fibonacci logarithmic spiral based upon these ratios.
Very interesting, and for people who might have a little difficulty explaining or understanding what you're talking about there, Wes, if you just stop and think about audio today and video, it's all digital involving number.
That's right. Right. That's, you've seen, we have taken what we have learned over the years, even before we even knew that the measures existed, working from the pyramid dimensions and so forth, we were able to isolate the system. We know the units of measure that we use of rams, raw feet, and raw inches. We know how pi was is related. There's more than one value to pi, and I know that's going to be a hard one to swallow. We've been able to square the circle, cube the sphere, based upon what we call raw system math. These are things that people have pondered for hundreds of years.
Wes, we will be right back, and I want to get back to the Star Trek discussion because I got a couple of questions for you. I know basically on our UFO sightings report we do every week, There's always one or two sightings in which something is cloaked or something that's warp 5 and disappears immediately. We'll talk about that when we come back. This is Jerry Pippin, and this is the UFO Files. What about this ability of UFOs, Wes Bateman? It seems to me that they do have the ability to cloak themselves or something. What's involved there? I mean, how do things disappear?
Well, mainly it's because, first of all, they are there, but they're not. And how do you explain something like that? Well, we have a lot of natural phenomena that... there's one particular that answers that question, and that is a mirage. Mirage is related to heat, where an image is bounced off of the ionosphere, and we see it at a different location, like an oil found the an oil refinery in Saudi Arabia. All of a sudden, you see it over in Kuwait. You know how to get there. Well, that's pretty much what it is. But the UFOs use a very strong magnetic field, which is part of their field drive. They use a high temperature plasma containment method where the plasma, which is a superheated gas, is stripped of electrons and circles in a torus or tube. And at great speed, the material becomes quite heavy, and due to the absence of the electrons, another force within the material, called the weak nuclear force, is also amplified, meaning increased mass in form of increased velocity. Something the size of a sugar cube would weigh over 4 billion tons. Now, they use a magnetic field with that in a certain way, and it's hard to talk about it. It's easier to show it. But what happens is that their field is very strong, and it becomes a magnetic lens. It's almost like a lens in a projector. It projects the image, what's inside of it, to another location. So if you can understand polarized light, you know, if you have two polarizers, then they're both at 45 degrees to each other, then you can see the light come through. But if just a slight off of that, where one polarizer is not matching the other one, disappears.
Out of phase like a sound.
That's right. Absolutely, out of phase. So a lot of times it's not saying everything you're looking at is a mirage. You can see the real thing, you know. But it does answer a lot of questions on why they're there and then they're not. It's not so much a...
Now, you have an answer, which I think is pretty interesting. When we talk about, let's take Star Trek, for instance. They're going from galaxy to galaxy, and I don't know about the term wormhole, but the whole idea is they can suddenly appear someplace else pretty fast, and you have an explanation of how that's possible.
Right. Well, they in Star Trek, the Nithium crystal and warp drive, really moving out there. Now, what they're talking about faster than the speed of light, you know. Well, most scientists would say, nah, that can't do that. Nothing can go faster than the speed of light. Well, how fast is the speed of light? That's the question. The thing is that light, if you run experiments with light, one type of experiment will tell you that light is little particles called photons. They're like little packets of energy.
So somewhat like on the internet when they send little packets around.
Right. Then the other type of experimenters say, no, light is in a waveform. Well, the fact of the matter is, light is in both forms. And as long as it operates in two forms, it is restricted in speed to, let's say, measure in miles, 186,233 miles a second in a vacuum, or roughly three.
That's rounding it off, huh?
For 300,000, yeah. People kind of get weird with me because I get, you know, numbers stick in my head. The one that I'm famous for is the resonance frequency of hydrogen. You know. They say, recite that one for me. Anyway.
I'm going to ask you before it's over.
All right. 1,420,405,752.7 cycles per second.
Heavy, man, heavy.
Yeah, now don't ask me my phone number. Anyway, the thing is that we live in a solar lens, which is, there's what they call the impedance for free space. So there is something in space that impedes things, right? And why it takes... light is impeded as well. Even glass will impede light. It'll slow down or break up into, you know, the spectrum and so forth. And then if you put it a spectrum to another one, it'll go back together and be white light again. Now, well, we live in a solar lens. As long as you're inside the solar lens, I understand, and you look up at the sky, you can see the stars. There they are, glittering away up there. But if you stepped out of our solar lens at a point that is called the heliopause, which is just beyond the planet Pluto, and you looked up in the sky, you wouldn't see a thing. It would be black as pitch. You wouldn't even see the place you came from. Now, what is happening is that light only manifests inside a solar lens. Aha. What if you could get light to either act like it was photonic or waveform? You are now causing the regulator or the, governor. So we take that restriction off of light, and you just use photonic or waveform. Then you've got what is called manipulated light. The craft, such as the large cigar-shaped craft.
We're talking about the mother ships. It's pretty common now in ufology. And
the small ones are 2 miles in length. The big ones are beyond my credibility would just sound ridiculous. You know, would go down the tubes if really state how big I have heard these things to be. But anyway, let's leave it with the cigar shape. They use a form of manipulated light. We call it the egg beater because of the fact it puts out pulses that, if you could see them, would look exactly like somebody blowing smoke rings, you know, with a cigar.
Kind of like a ramjet principle.
Right. It pulses them. It pulses them. And and then they pick that off a light coming from the light source, such as the sun, which is action and reaction, because of action and reaction. Now, as long as they leave the solar lens at a speed faster than 186,233, they immediately enter the solar lens that they have arranged for a destination, which means that the space between the lenses doesn't exist.
So regardless of how far that distance is, like maybe 42 light years away or 60 light years away, it's almost instantaneously.
Correct. In other words, if you left this, went beyond the heliophores at a speed less than the 186,000, you'd have 42 light years or 47 light years to make it from here to Alpha Centauri. You've got to go above that speed. Otherwise, you're dealing with, it's a fulnum, is what another term for it, to call it a fulnum. It's just like the two lenses were right next to each other.
So in other words, you have to hit that warp speed or whatever at the speed of light to get out of it.
You're absolutely right. And then, as I say, inside the lens you can see the stars, outside the lens you can't see the stars. What we're seeing is a nova took place 9,000 years ago, probably yesterday, you know. We're seeing real-time activity with the Hubble, things like that, instead of things that happened a long, long time ago.
Well, really, I always assumed that it was just taking the light to get here all that time, and we're actually looking back in history, but you don't think so, huh?
No, it's recent. In this case, it would be recent. You know, I can't prove what I just said, and you know, you got to say, well, how in the hell did he come up with this? Well, that is for another show.
Well, we're going to do some more shows. I've enjoyed visiting downtown Bowling Springs.
Yeah. Well, it's okay. We're out here with the jackrabbits and the coyotes.
But you have nice Joshua trees everywhere.
Yeah. That's what they say. You get to see the coyotes, the jackrabbits, and bake them. Anyway, the old story of the guy on the top of the Himalayas. I can't think of the guy going all the way up there. You really want to know if you want to go to the top of Mount Everest to come to Golden Springs.
Sir Edmund Hillary.
Yeah. Yeah, Hillary. So anyway, back to what we're doing here. UFOs have been coming for thousands of years. They've been observing this frequency barrier condition. And then we have to look at the fact that they're not restricted by this condition. They see things we don't see. They see our limits of perception, like say with our sight, we see, from red to violet, and then we don't see anything before infrared or after ultraviolet.
Saying their spans a lot larger or wider.
That's right. They probably hear as good as my Great Dane, you know. And what we're looking at too, though, is a great deal of their efforts to understand what's going on here with this frequency barrier condition. The grays, what are they? Well, they're real, but they're not the prime individuals involved in this activity. The real ones behind this whole thing look exactly like us. And that was the old story, we met the enemy and they're us. You know, Fogo, I think, said that.
They literally could be walking among us, and we may not know it, except maybe they're a little taller, you said one time?
Yes, they're taller. And you don't see them. So you see the grays, which are genetically engineered to operate in this condition. In fact, they understand their pink and color until they come into this condition and they turn gray, never to become pink again. It's almost like a photograph that, like a Polaroid, it once developed, that's it. They have no digestive system, nor do they reproduce.
If they don't have a digestive system and don't reproduce, are they cloned or what?
They are cloned. They insert the clone embryo inside one of them. In fact, if you recall the alien autopsy, and I know there's a lot of controversy going on whether that's real or not, but the autopsy showed a a thing that's being removed from the diploma, from the autopsy thing. And it's very much like today, they can put an embryo of just about any other animal inside a rabbit to keep it alive until, and then they send the rabbit and, by FedEx, you know, to wherever they're sending it. And, but...
yeah, and there's been some recent news about cloning of even human embryos, so, I mean, you know.
Right, yeah, I saw that recently the Japanese have successfully cloned, and their interest is getting the stem cells. And, well, if that's the only purpose to do that, I don't know, the moral way of looking at it, I don't know. I think the person is worn out.
I agree with you completely on that.
I mean, what did they have to offer, you know, to make them, I don't know. I can get into that, and I'm just going to sound awful.
Well, we'll save you then. We're talking with Wes Bateman, and when we come back, I want to go back to the pyramids and this connection to this overall scheme of everything, and Wes is quite the expert on the pyramids, and has some interesting things to ask him, and I'm sure he has some interesting things to tell us. This is Jerry Bateman. Wes Bateman, you know, you were talking earlier about these signals coming from radio telescopes, and you're talking about people and ufology. There's people that are writing down symbols all the time, and these hieroglyphics that have been seen on some of these craft by people are reported to be very similar to Egyptian writings, and there must be something to that.
Yes. In fact, there's a lot of features about the Great Pyramid that, you know, are not just not common knowledge, but presently, the Great Pyramid has been stripped of its casing stone, which originally were of Tura limestone that could be highly polished. And the four sides amounted to about 22 acres. So the Arabs in the 10th century used the stones and built mosques and bathhouses in Cairo with them, used the pyramid as. But what it did do is revealed the core stone. Now the entrance to the pyramid just had a pointed point over the top of it, and a triangular stone. Now the area of that triangular stone is 2.64, okay, square units in that stone. Now, if I were to tell you something that it measures, but what it is that 2.64 angstroms is the wavelength of what is called the bracket M6 spectral line of hydrogen, okay?
Correct? I'm going to take your word for that.
Yes, I guarantee it. If you cut the pyramid diagonally, you're also going to find that it's the square area of what we call the diagonal cross-section is 2.624.4.
Well, there was, for you Pioneer Radio listeners, the outtakes of a program that we're putting together for a syndication in the States, in which we talked to Wes Bateman about all kinds of things that are very, very interesting. You might be looking for the program and its finished product and compare the two in a couple of months. Anyway, we enjoy being here every day, Monday through Friday, and on Saturdays, too, on the Pioneer Radio Internet program out of London, England. Until tomorrow night, this is Jerry Pippin. Cheers.